Okay, you start us off.
Well, I've been looking at how to make a painting be aware of itself. So sometimes you watch a film and there's a moment of self-reference in the film where the film will go back to itself, sort of breaking the fourth wall, allowing us to know it's a film, as well as a story, it's also an art form. So it stops us from getting lost in the film. I don't know if you know the breaking the fourth wall kind of thing.
And you realise
Hi there, Tony.
I'm Gary.
Gary.
Hi.
Bob.
Hi, Gary.
Hi there.
What's your last name?
Simmons.
You're here at 5 o'clock, Gary. Right here.
I am? Okay.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Right.
I'm just going to read it and find out what the title is of this again. If that's the title. Painting. Who's watching who?
I think I started to describe it too complicated, so I'll just say, you know, if you put a painting on the wall an object in front of it, or a person in front of it, who is, where's the conversation beginning? Is it the painting or is it the person looking at the painting? In my practice, I'm trying to create a painting that, and I don't know if it's possible, that is self-aware, that makes any sense at all.
That's sort of reflexive.
Yeah, kind of.
With an X in it, painting.
Yeah.
Rather than reflective.
Because
the reflective painting reflects you.
Exactly.
Whereby reflective painting reflects itself through the awareness of the painting for itself.
Yeah.
So it's back to the idea of the object having an awareness of itself.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we were trying to get at last. That's probably why we're always trying to get to
we hadn't got the words at the time, really. It had to come to another conversation.
It's that hovering.
That's right. Yeah. We had a hovering before it came up the surface.
And that's where it stays.
That's right. And now we can let it sift down again.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've done that then.
Yeah, that's it.
But you are talking about that in between space.
I think we're all going to be talking about that.
That's very interesting.
There's a painting by Velasquez of the, I don't know, you probably all know it, with the mirror in the background, and actually the painter's in the Las Meninas.
Yeah, Las Meninas,
And for me, that kind of works as a reflexive painting, where it's aware of itself as a painting, but it still exists as a painting. So today, how would we go about doing that?
And it also had Velasquez in it.
Yeah.
And it was, It's a crazy hall of mirrors, that painting.
Well, it's interesting. Insofar as that's sort of what I wanted to get at, it seems to me, if you talk about topology, you have to have three points in space. It can be any three points.
Okay.
Because it does then open up the space. You can't have it between two points, because two points is only one.
How do you mean three points, for example?
You have to have three or more points in space to have space between you, to have an area between
you. You can't have two.
You can't have two. How can you have two? It's a straight line. At the moment you introduce another point, you have an area or a space that you can start to explore what that space is about, the dimensions of that space, and the qualities of that space, and all the attributes of that space. So you're talking, seems to me, about if you have a viewer, if you have an object, where is the third point of reference? I don't know.
Well, that's the in-between space, I suppose.
Pardon me?
That's the in-between space.
Yeah, well, that's what we've sort of been referring to that. And that space is actually between the points of space, or the points in space.
I think it's very interesting, the notion of putting points in space. When you, with augmented reality, you begin to map space, and like in the painting with the mirror, which you've now forgotten, that the mirror was quite an important object within the house. It was a new object in a way. And the new objects these days are screens, but it's screens where we can see ourselves. But augmented reality is the next version of this objectification myself, where it maps us in space. And it could be in this space here. We could be being mapped now by our cameras around us. But, and so when you talk about the object as being there in front of you, this old notion of painting being an object on a wall, you say, is it painting on the wall?
There's an interesting artist, I forget her name, who puts a painting on the wall and then an object in front of it facing it. So if there's no visitors, there's always
somebody watching.
Yeah, there's just always a dialogue. That's really interesting.
Why would you not put a video?
Maybe it's just a really simple idea of just a stone or a rock or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is about nowadays is that we've got this sense of painting being this form where we've got something in our hand, the brush. Then there's this thing called something to do with content. It's something to do in the world that people can read through some story there or myths or whatever in the painting itself, and then we read it later on through our books, through these words that we have. And then as we enter into the screen world and this visual world and this sound world and this mapped world, the augmented reality world, we begin to have a different perception of what painting means, for me anyway. And where the painting is still the brush in the hand, the pencil in the hand, and a bit, some card.
What would you suggest it is?
Well, this is the in-between thing. We're in a time of transformation and transition, I think, in our society in a big way. Partly because the technologies that are coming through, but partly also because we're in a network society. So the audience changes, so who the audience changes in your idea, in your, this thing about saying, well, who's the audience? Who's looking at the painting? And where is the painting? Is it on a wall still? So every one of those things becomes contentious in terms of what they don't exist anymore.
But isn't that a difference between the term painting and image? Yeah, just thinking that photography, with the advent of photography, that there's always the potential kind of death of painting there as well. And so I was just wondering whether there's something that, the specifics of painting, the actual specifics of the act of the materiality and the act of kind of making the painting, whether that's, which kind of got me thinking a little bit about kind of Richter's, mirror kind of paintings, and how they kind of deny that sense of sort of the materiality of the painting, but somehow sort of reside as a painter.
It's very interesting in saying that because of Hockney's stuff going on and the way he's used
the image, and the iPad, that's true.
But he's done both things there. What he's done is actually made it as still as to sit in the gallery space, still as an image that he drew in a landscape. So he's gone back to that thing of actually going to the landscape in order to draw his image up, but with a new technology, putting it into a space where it sits on a wall as an image, not as a painting, but he calls it a painting. But also what he does at exactly the same time is print it, so he can make reproductions of it.
But do you think these artists are only able to do these things that aren't actually painting because they have such a long and varied history of painting and the language of painting?
So.
And if they hadn't, then it wouldn't be painting, it would be an installation.
I think that altered the idea of the history of the person involved in this thing called painting. It's quite important.
One thing that's really interesting to me. And I heard Deanna Cuthbert speaking about the Gerwood Prize in the Gerwood Drawing Prize. And it struck me as she was speaking as to whether during the course of the time that a show was on, if a drawing could be self-generated and at the end of that time disappear. In other words, through an algorithmic process, a drawing would be conjured up and then it would, on its own accord, disintegrate. So it would be a drawing or an image for only a finite space of time, and it would theoretically be self-generated and self-destructive, which would then would give it. But still, at the root of of it is somebody has to conceive it.
Yeah. It's this root, isn't it? So, it's whether it's a brush or this. I think it's interesting when you call the root. It's not the material. It's not this. It's not this.
So
the root.
It's the questions you have, the artist has.
Yeah.
Because I've also been thinking, what do we need to actually make a painting? Can we just put in a plastic bag, you know, things that were in, you know, papers or books or the actual material, if the material of paint's important, or, you know, can we put it in a plastic bag, put it on the wall and let the viewer work out how to put it together? I mean, what difference would that be to actually having the painting, which the viewer also, by language, puts together?
Yeah. But all that comes out of that sense of imagination, which is so squeezed out of us as we enter into a work environment, and we become totally immersed in language or discourse of work. Or actually, if we work in university as a teacher, again, the discourse of teaching and the language we use to actually document that imagination tends to get pushed away as language takes over.
Mm. So language does take over, doesn't it?
Well, here we are.
Yeah.
But I like language in terms of speaking it out. Because somehow there's a bit of fluidity there. And we can say a few silly things as we go along. As soon as we write it down, I will stop in my tracks when I start writing it down, thinking, this is not right, this is not right.
It's not at all.
I know, but it's
all right. It's interesting that then you do write it down, and then you do consider it, and you do reject it or accept it.
Yes.
I'm just applying for a PhD program now, and it has to do with seniors.
With what, sorry?
With seniors, my age group, and how you can re-stimulate that imagination, creative process. I maintain you can do it through drawing, especially the new techniques of drawing that are coming out of research in the U.S., like mind mapping. And it's now pretty well definitively proven that as you age, it's not a matter, as the brain ages, it's not a matter of massive cell loss. In fact, there are areas of the brain that continue to gain cell mass, and those are the areas that we, the pattern recognition.
Yes, it's more the cell mass, it's the connections.
Right, and it has to do with something we've all referred to as wisdom. As you get wiser, all really the brain is doing is recognizing more patterns.
Yes.
It doesn't have to do the work.
But in a way, that wisdom you're talking about is based on the child being curious. It's that reawakening of curiosity.
Mm.
And that you say we lose in our work span, but then how do you
come back
to it in its context of life is the
reimagining.
Yeah. I think you have to re-stimulate
One of those things is play, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's being very playful.
Very much for seniors it's play, because they won't accept it unless it is play.
Yes.
Because their number one concern is not their number two or three concern is intellectual stimulation, but their first one is fun. I want social interaction.
Yeah.
So you have to be sort of subversive.
Yeah.
Come in under the guise of something social in the form of drawing and whatever. Because it's also it's definitively proven that the biggest defense against age-related dementia is brain exercise and how well you keep it exercised. So if you can keep the brain exercised subversively,
but with the body and relationship to the body in some way, this thing about the person sitting here was talking about this thing about the autistic person about the reminding yourself of the word and how touch something that said that relates to word coming out your mouth.
Okay.
To make that what it is. Otherwise, if you just speak it, you don't know it is that. In a way, it's interesting. And that way that as one grows into old age, there's a sense of somehow having been narrowed down in terms of your involvement in the world. It's that opening back out into the world again. through curiosity and exploring.
Imagination.
And imagination and play, and that related to how the body, something to do with the body operates as well. So back to the painting thing being this thing about a hand going out and then doing something with a hand, rather than just thinking about it. So it might be in painting, there might be a sense of like you, one, having the idea, but then you have to then do something with it.
But it's like what you're saying about speaking. Yes. And the idea of writing and down and kind of capturing something, but having that flexibility that you can actually do something that's plastic, I suppose. There's a plasticity about it being possible to kind of shift that and change that. So you might have the idea, but then actually trying to. Yeah. I was just thinking about also that context of the artist, the intention, the object, and then there's the audience. I was just thinking about that idea of the three things you were talking about earlier.
And that could be the three
others. Yeah, there seems to be that kind of relation. There's that sense of what it is that you want to put out there, what you're thinking. Yeah. But then there's the process of how you play, or
do you want this sense of engagement in a way? And this thing about an in between, which is this thing you said first about it's the engagement rather than the transmission of. Which the word tends to do, the word's going to be transmitting stuff to the actors all the time. Where what we're saying, actually stand back a bit. It's just a painting. The painting's something between you and the painting. It's not the painting itself, and it's not you. It's something in between. Yeah. So that's
just a fourth thing. Yeah.
Yes, and it's about these points you're saying about the points. And it's not just a line of like, that's there, there's a line in between us that somehow is unbroken. You're saying, no, there's something else there that affects the way we actually read in one sense the painting, but another is that sense of getting back to the notion of looking rather than reading a painting.
But it's also so that act of looking, and then the idea of the painting speaking, the idea of there's a show that was on it was on at the Tates and Ives, and it's just moved to Warwick Mead. I can't remember what it's called now.
Daniel
Sturges curated it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that idea of conversations, and paintings, conversations. And I think that for me, part of that is that idea of having, conversing. Or the paintings having a conversation with you and kind of grabbing you. I suppose just on the side, I was thinking about kind of Mary Heilman in her piece, she talked about this idea of having conversations with paintings to the point where she actually makes a chair relationship.
Maybe that was the lady I was thinking of.
Oh, okay, the Mary Heilman
chair. She makes a chair.
Yeah, she makes a chair. That
Mary Heilman.
Heilman, yeah, Heilman.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
But the sense I suppose just thinking about that sense about how one moves around an exhibition of a museum and how certain objects or paintings speak to you over and above others. Mm. Yeah, so the sense that then, there is that kind of sense that they kind of have a voice of sorts.
And then that brings us back to the sort of witchcraft museum, because it's so much about curation.
And context, yeah. Mm. It's interesting because I went to see it at Warwick rather than at Tate. Yeah. And I felt really sad that I'd missed it in the particular context where I think it was really sort of meant for. Because I think it would enable certain words to speak in a very different way. Mm. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, they were speaking differently.
But when you talk about speak, it's like, what do you mean by speak?
Right.
Suggest, maybe is a better word.
Suggest, what?
Yeah, it's... Well, it's kind of, I suppose, something about kind of grabbing your attention, or sort of. But there's something within the works that kind of want to communicate something with you.
But does it? But since we use the word communicate, the word speak, related to back to language again. Yeah. So it's just trying to get away from that idea of reading a painting, the semiotics, all that, and then getting us back to the sense of looking and what that the emotion.
How can you do that? How can you just look without? I mean, I don't know how that's possible.
But maybe
you can look through emotion, just pure emotion.
But your emotions are going to turn into words.
No.
Why?
No, they're turning you into an artist. You turn into a painter.
But what's the show? I mean, it's interesting, this idea of how you look and how something
manifests,
grabs you, or
resonates.
Yeah, grabs it, you resonate.
It's an
energy. Maybe the other word is moves you. Yeah, it's kind of, it sounds like a kind of romantic terminology. Yeah. That you, it's the idea of kind of it's almost a bit like that act of kind of making when you talk about intuition, the act of kind of engaging with a piece of work, or work engaging. Maybe, yeah, you're right, speaking and conversations maybe, or communicating is the wrong, you know, it's maybe
it's a different
an unuseful
discourse.
Kind of, yeah.
It seems to me that that sense of discourse of looking is not talked about enough in a way, and about the emotion, about the...
Or the resonance, the energy that happens in between you and it in this topological space.
Yeah. Which is a mad space from this perspective.
Yeah, but, you know, is it... Does that space have dimensions? Does it have... perimeters?
And once you bring that into it, you bring the notion of what painting is within the space again. And back to it, does painting sit in the wall still?
Right. And does it affect others the same, with the same resonance? Or do you bring a resonance yourself that bounces off the resonance
of that?
And is it one object that sits? Or is it something that catches you as you walk in to look at something, and just catches you by the side here, that sets you up in a way? So if you shut your eyes and try and look, what's the difference between shutting your eyes and looking at the painting and having your eyes open at the painting? So the imagination, so that's the thing about augmented reality and mapped space, which gives, we talked about points earlier on.
Right.
Is you can enter into the painting space. So the idea of the painting being a bit of paper and a bit of something you draw on is not there anymore. In this world we live in now, because it's augmented in a mapped space, it's holograph virtually. So you can walk into the painting, you'd be immersed in it in a way, if you want to talk about it in that sort of way. And it's not 3D TV either, which I think is appalling. But
I'm intrigued. What do you mean? Can you give me an example?
We've got a 3D space in there actually, but we haven't got it going at the moment, so that'll be an example next time we come in.
Okay.
You're talking about a holographic space.
Sort of. It's the thing about the shutting your eyes and walking to the space.
Right.
And what the notion of painting is, the painting something we make a mark with this with our finger? Is it defining what painting is?
I think there's a difference between painting and 3D space, but it's quite subtle. When it's a 3D space, you move within it while standing still, but I think the painting is a sort of very flat surface, even though the 3D space is actually probably flatter than the painting.
Yes.
But I guess it's flat in a different way.
Yeah.
But you move, your mind moves differently around a painting than it would in a 3D space.
Yeah.
So
I was just trying to go back to your idea about saying, okay, the root of painting is with inside us. It's not the painting itself. So therefore, it's like, what are we trying to get out of us that becomes, because all the painting is a mediation between us and the other, whatever the other is. So saying, okay, if it's us, we are the root, and we are there for the painting.
And do we need the painting? Do we need an actual physical painting?
Yeah.
Or can we just have a conversation about the painting?
Yes. And then make up, and then that's the painting. So is this thing about rethinking... I don't know if one needs to do it.
I just said that, and I don't think you can have a conversation about paintings. It's something wordless. I mean,
we're going to go back to this idea of being sort of... I suppose it's this idea of if the discourse isn't around language, and you know, if it presents this idea that the painting comes from us, then it's not something you then talk about.
Yeah.
It's something that
personal.
But then is that suggesting that the relationship between the artist and the audience no longer exists? Does that mean that...
It means that the relationship between the artist and the artist's imagination and the audience has changed.
Because the technology moves back and forth.
Yes.
The audience becomes the artist. The artist becomes the audience. And it's still, to get back to this notion of it's the energy.
Yes.
It's just resonating, and it it originally comes from you, and you're bouncing it off something, but does the painting have to be there? Buddhists, of course, and I hate to get back to Buddhism, but Buddhists, of course, say you don't need it. The energy is there. It is within you. It doesn't need a stimulant.
I tell you why it's interesting what you're saying. Sorry, I'll stop.
No.
What's interesting about what you just said about this, and we talk about the root of what the painting is, and then begin to say, well, it's not the object, it's actually the person, it's actually the object has been made. So it's just getting back to the root and saying it's inside us and inside imagination, maybe. And it's that, and then that you saying about it's immersive in it. It's then amongst us, who's the artist in it? So within a conversation, if I walk into one of the big companies up the road here and we have a meeting, there might be one or two people there that I might think they're slightly arty, and the rest of them are definitely not arty. It's about this root inside us, something to do with the root inside us, that's about our identity. They're about to identify with this word called artist and then identify with this other thing called an object called painting. And
Sophie Carl did something where she replaced paintings in a collection with viewers' memories and recollections associated with that painting. So she replaced the image on the wall with text coming from one person's point of view of the painting, and then presented this as the absence of a picture, but someone else's like feeling about it. So she shifted you like a step away, but then a step into someone else as well.
That's interesting.
But that thing itself then, I was just thinking about the objectness of this painting, because the way it presents is this idea of the concept or the feeling of what a painting might be, or the energy of what a painting might be, but then it kind of comes back to this objectness, because in a way then, I presume what you get from the Sophie Carl is you get an engagement with the text, the language, but you still have this object that you're engaging with that then is removed. But it's still in its own right, it still has its own, in the same way that a bit of media, I suppose it depends what this augmented reality is, but it still has a sense of objectness. It has to have a sense of objectness, isn't it?
Because, well, the object being points in space that are mapped, so it's back to the three-dimensionality or many-dimensionality. And therefore what you do with those points in space, how you connect the dots together. But I'm really, really interested, I think I'll have to think about it, but I'm really interested about the idea of thinking through what the root is, and then say the root of the painting is not the canvas or the brush that paints the thing, but it's the person behind it. And therefore, if that's the case, then what's this thing that the person who calls themselves an artist, what is it about them in the world that's kind of has changed, is changing now in this age where the technology is full of other things we can use to reproduce the world around us. And it's not just a brush on a canvas or a pencil.
I think that for me, I don't know, but painting holds the space that nothing else can.
Well, I think in part, and almost specifically because of all this other stuff that exists around it, this virtual world or the non-physical or the non-objectness world, the sense of the particularity of the objectness and the materiality of whether it's paint, canvas, then there's something about that feels pertinent in response to that. So I also kind of feel that does hold a space that, and that's why there's something about it that seems to keep going.
Yeah.
As much as I can listen to recorded digital track, record, there is
totally different.
Something else in the way that you can stand in that Hockney exhibition and look at his paintings and then look at his iPad drawings, and they are both registers of the the artistic process, but one of them has matter, and so that does something as well.
I disagree. I disagree entirely. It's the thought of the making, I think, that is the source of the energy that is brought to it. And quite frankly, I'd rather look at the iPad than those horrible things on the wall, as far as I'm concerned. But that's a personal take on it. But they're both energies, but my energy reacts differently with either of them as yours does. But I think it is in... It does, and I don't think the energy is really even in the painting itself. It's in the thought of what made that painting. It doesn't even have to be an object.
I think it's in the intentions of the artist. If they're based around questions to do with painting, then it's painting. But I'm not like, what's his name, Arshweger? Anyone? He did a painting that was a triptych, but it wasn't a painting, it was just this lovely veneered wood. And there was no paint in it at all, but he hung it and he said, that's a painting, and it became a painting. But with Hockney's iPad, I'm a bit iffy about them. I don't know, if they seem to be more like sketches than actual paintings.
I would use the word sketch as well, yeah. Particularly my strongest energy feels to be his multi-films. Those are what I connect to on most in terms of his thoughts and his process. But I think that they're sketches, as I think I'm drawing some sketches as well.
But the sketches, to me, sketches, for instance, of Leonardo or of Hockney, hold more than the finished piece, way more.
Is that because of the unfinishedness of them, or is it?
It is. I think it is just the compression of information. There is so much information in those drawings that don't get into the finished piece because the edits, they are edited out.
Would you say that the iPad drawings are more scientific and the paintings become more intuitive?
I'm not
way that you read them?
I'm not sure. I would say that the paintings are more contrived because they have come from something. They have come from the sketches, if you will, the thought processes, the original incarnation of the thought is the sketch. It's real. It's not contrived. It's just, it comes out.
It's a register of thought.
Yeah, register of thought. As I heard it described, drawing freezes time. It freezes a point in time.
So that idea of the immediacy of those.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, because what's interesting, I was just thinking about the relationship between Hockney's been out in the landscape, and so Constable's sketches, Constable studies, where Constable studies feel very different to then the composed Hay Wayne, for example, which feel very, very different narrative that gets set up, and there's very very different. Then with the large scale paintings that you get presented with from some of those, I haven't been to the exhibition, so we're talking from sort of slightly kind of mediated sort of understanding of them. But the large-scale paintings are ones that we actually took out into the woods as well, so there's a sense of immediacy there as well. So I wonder if they act as that kind of... It's interesting that kind of sense of reception to the... Maybe it's the media and the objectness of the media of the iPad and the materiality of the paint in those paintings. Because they're both a kind of a recording of that time, aren't they?
One seems to me to be an exploration, a real mind exploration, like trying to figure it out, trying to explore something new, which a sketch always is in preparation for. And once you've got the sketch right, then it's translated, and then it's a matter of whether you're in plein air or whether you're in the studio, it's a matter of just getting it out.
So funny hearing a drawing perspective and a painting's perspective.
And lots of painters don't even sketch. So that would, for instance, Pollock, I think he was sketching. It was so immediate. It was so did for his psychiatrist before he even started the drip paintings that are really tight. They're not tight as most drawings are, but they're still tight for what he went on to do. But I think it's just a question of what reflects that exploration, that wondering, that inquiry, that working it out in your head, or not in your head.
Yeah. I'm still hanging on to the root inside your head, and the painting inside, whatever it is, it doesn't manifest itself inside your head. But it is inside your head in a fragmented sort of way. And what comes out, it comes out maybe through your hand, if you're not disabled enough to not be able to use your hands, and some people are. And it's that sense of also being not be able to see as you grow older, and not be able to see a painting even properly without maybe help from glasses or maybe you lose your sight. And that you're an artist all your life and you lose these abilities to be this thing called an artist, which will keep related to this object thing. And then at that moment, how you still stay an artist but become disabled, but still know you're an artist. So the essence of the artist, for me, and that energy that comes out of being that way in the world, it really interests me. And it interests me because the child for me quite often is the artist. They're curious, they explore, they draw lines, they do this. Even the ones who are like very disabled are like incredibly involved in the world and trying to work their way into the world somehow, trying to learn about the world in a way. And yet we tend to lose so much of that, and then we've got this area called this professionalised through educational systems to create these things called artists, or people who think they have got to hang on to that energy, and then they get shoved through the institutional space, and the language defines a discourse of these institutions, and then define a practice, and then we try, and as we through life, we try and make this practice work. We realise there's very few places for our practice to work, and we say, okay, my practice is painting, and it only works in a few spaces throughout our life. We might have 3 exhibitions throughout our life in a gallery for ourselves, and then what? Nothing. The same with acting, the same with filmmaking, the same with all these things that have, in last century, were quite good for quite a few people, but in our century so many more people doing those sorts of things around, being shuffled through the universities to help do it, we haven't got the spaces for this to happen. So therefore we say it changes the nature of ourselves in terms of how we relate to the world now. And the feeling I have is that we as artists have to relate to the world in a very different way. But it's not making paintings actually. Maybe, unfortunately. Although it's fantastic to make paintings for ourselves and our friends. But to think we can actually go through and for there to be an audience there still is very, very, very rare thing.
How important is the audience to the painting?
Yeah, I think that's another crucial question to ask.
Would the paintings be the same if there was no audience?
Well, that goes back to your premise in a way, this idea of the painting and the... what was the question about who's watching who?
Yeah.
Which just kind of brings in this kind of idea of the necessity of the audience.
Yeah. So once the painting has come off the wall and it's back in your studio, it's all wrapped up in bubble wrap, how does it live? Is it still alive?
Yeah,
very
interesting. I think that's the idea.
And it's interesting that you say that you didn't see the Hockney exhibition, but you're still able to talk about it as if you did see it.
Well, I suppose when you just watch the odd. It's mediated, which is why I think there's that kind of strategy and context of the iPad being a strategy rather than this. It's been interesting to talk about that as an object.
Yeah.
But I think the bell's gone.
Yeah.
Thank you.